Welcome to the extended interview, the extended version of the CrossLink Radio special on World Day of Orofacial Myofunctional Science. This interview is an extension of the time that we spent with Judith Demper-Page, who has been a practicing myofunctional therapist in private practice since 2009. Her patients are children and adults, and she went for her certification, for her training, after being a dental hygienist for over 30 years. And I know that she worked really hard to get her certification through the IAOMT group. Welcome, Judy.
Hey, thank you very much. Hi, Cheryl.
It's good to have you back.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
So this World Day of OM Science is kind of an important day, I think, to really elevate the practice and the perceived idea of what an orofacial myofunctional therapist is and can do for someone. This isn't just a cosmetic kind of a thing. It's not, you know, like putting lipstick on or something. There's a lot of science and there's a lot of education that goes into this. And I know that you worked really hard to get your certification. I ran into you like two or three times and you're like, oh, it's killing me. So
yes. No, it was well worth it because the training to be a myofunctional therapist is very different than a dental hygiene practice. So I was very glad that I did it, invested that time. There is just so much to know, and there is a real void in the kind of people that aren't being taken care of. So
well,
I'm
that's,
really glad to help.
That's what I've been finding, too, is, you know, when I was I spent a lot of time getting clinicians up to speed with respect to caries management and looking at periodontal disease as a systemic problem, not just a scraping problem, and doing true diagnostics and doing all of that with dentistry. And that is, you know, I didn't do it alone. I'm not saying that, but it was kind of gratifying to see a major shift happening in dentistry. And what's happening now, though, is that the airway suddenly has a place. And people are looking at x-rays behind the ramus of the jaw, the up and down part for the not uninitiated.
In 3D.
And they're looking, they're looking at the airway. And you're looking at this tube, this black area on a traditional cephalomeric x-ray, and we're seeing that this airway is collapsing or super tiny, or we're looking at tonsils and going, whoa, there's no way for air to go through there. So this whole area here has been extremely important to me to bring this to the world, and I'm so happy I have a podcast that I can say click here and learn more about it from people that know more about it than what I do. So you've been having an active practice since about 2009, and you see a variety of kinds of patients. Is that fair to say?
It's true. You know, you brought up the cephalometric. We've been looking at that for a long time, taking cephalometric for a long time, and we never really recognized just how small that airway was. So what we're trying to do now, what the focus is, you know, with some of the top people who are concerned about airway, is we're trying to see how we can correct the problem sooner, how we could educate the parents or educate the pediatricians to as to what to do, and working together, something I have a couple of patients who are young, and they started, one of them started when she was about 4 years old with the ALF, and the ALF stands for Advanced Light Wire Functional, and it's a wire that is placed by a dentist or an orthodontist on the inside margin, gum margin of the palate, and you almost don't know it's there in that it's not obstructive at all to the tongue, which many of the expanders that are used in orthodontics, it blocks the tongue from reaching the palate. And after all the hard work of establishing tongue to the palate, lip seal, nasal breathing that is accomplished, then if you put this cog of a expander in the palate, it just makes it very not natural. And so it kind of undoes some of the hard work that the patient and I have accomplished. So I'm very excited about the light wire functional, but there's not too many practitioners who, we don't have enough. Let's just put it that way. I know that many are being trained, but we still need more. I know in Westchester, New York, there is not a single practitioner who is willing to place the ALF appliance, and it is needed because the sooner we can help children with after we discover that they have sleep apnea, if they've been diagnosed, you can put an ALF appliance in the palate and begin the process of expansion, not waiting until, you know, the late age of 8 to 10, but beginning that expansion when you can take advantage of their growth, their growth spurts. So, and with that ALF appliance, you work with the myofunctional therapist. You also work with the cranial osteopath because it was created for the three professionals to work together toward achieving the goal of facial expansion at an early age.
So let's kind of map this out a little bit. So you have an infant, and the infant is tongue-tied, let's say, and the mother doesn't know, and nobody's looking, and la, la, la. And that, let's use this as an example, and if I'm wrong, you're going to correct me.
Yes.
And so now the upper arch, the palate, is never achieving its widest
moment. Right, it's stunted.
Pardon me?
It's stunted.
It's
like
stunted.
Its growth is a little stunted.
Awesome, sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's stunted, and now the kid is two, and the kid comes along to a dentist appointment, let's say, or a dental hygiene appointment with the mom, and the dental hygienist is like, wow, that kid's tongue is really kind of tied. You should probably see somebody. Look at that, how narrow the palate is, la, la. And now what happens? So now the mother's like, what? And you don't have to wait till the kid is eight.
Right.
So do you see an orthodontist? Who do you see? What do they refer to?
Well, it depends. You know, sadly, some dentists will look at that situation and say, oh, let's watch it. But then a proactive dentist will say, oh, let's send you over to the myofunctional therapist where she could see what needs to take place and just get the proper, get the ball rolling. Or if he has a relationship or she has a relationship with a pediatric dentist or anyone who has the right connection, they could get the tongue tie revised. But before the tongue tie is revised, you need some stretching exercises, which the myofunctional therapist can provide. And then, you know, we look from there to see if the child needs expansion, which, you know, if the child has a small airway, you can look right in and see if from mouth breathing, the low tongue posture, from mouth breathing, if the tonsils are swollen, then you try to open up that airway for the child, as well as maybe these days they're shaving the tonsils. They're not, or many of them are not fully removing the tonsils. They're just kind of shaving them down. So, but there are options to serve the child to get that airway opened at an earlier age than we've practiced in the past.
So I want to, as you were talking, I thought to myself, what about this failure to thrive thing that
definitely
children have, and you see these tiny, tiny little two-year-olds. So that person could also, well, let's say it this way. Failure to thrive is also a symptom of airway obstructions, which may come from a variety of things that we've been talking about during the special, with anywhere from tongue tie to super crazy adenoids and, you know, deviated septums and all this other kind of stuff. So, so this airway part with this failure to thrive issue may be also alleviated by a myofunctional therapist who has special training in this particular ELF appliance. Did I say it right?
Yes. Awesome. Yes. Yes. In that the thing about, you know, most children or even adults that, you know, the ELF is also used on adults. I just don't want to limit it to children. It's also used on adults, which is something that is contradicting many of what we've been taught, that you don't expand adults, but perhaps you can invite someone on to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
So we were saying about the expansion. What was your question?
So the reason for the airway obstruction is often identified by having a narrow palate, and that palate can be expanded as young as, I know I was kind of honing in on the two-year-old thing, but
yeah,
do something already at that stage, which was kind of unheard of. But you're saying that even if the kid is 8 or even if the kid is 15 or 37,
yes,
we can still use this kind or another appliance maybe to expand the arch.
It's a very slow appliance. It's very slow. It involves cranial movement that a lot of times when we get in there with the traditional expander and we have the parent crank it, you know, they have an actual tool that they crank the palate open.
Yes.
We crank it like one or two turns a day or however it goes. And that is a physical intrusion, so to speak, on the body. And so when you're doing it the light wire way, it's considering, it's being more gentle, it's taking longer, it's going along with body rhythm, and I haven't taken the course on it, so I really don't know as much as I need to know, but I know that it's very much more considerate of the body, and it gets a very good result in producing airway. And the other thing that you really want to help children with who are failure to thrive or not growing is their chewing. You know,
right,
the food that they're eating, getting them chewing, because that really stimulates facial development.
Yeah, I had Dr. Mew on a couple of weeks ago or this past fall, and he has some interesting thoughts on chewing. I'm almost hysterical over this lack of chewing that we're doing in the United States between juicing and smoothies. There's just and the soft foods, there's just no reason to chew. Well,
right,
we all know about atrophy, especially these elite athletes who do a lot of this juicing. They know what atrophy is, and your face will atrophy, and if you are juicing when you're 12 or what is the big expansion age between 12 and 17 or something like that, you're missing a huge growth opportunity and atrophying the facial muscles and the palate by this lack of chewing.
It's really profound. It's really kind of sad. And it starts very early, which we all raised our children on baby food. And so now some of my children, you know, that's what they prefer. They prefer soft, processed pizza, whatever's easy. You pop it in the microwave, it pops out, it's cheesy. It's delicious.
No.
You know, this is what America runs on. And it's sad that we are so miseducated. And part of it, you know, it's the advertising agency that's teaching our children, you know, we're working and we're not there as much as we need to be to take care of these things. And from generation to generation, it's just getting worse.
So as far as appliances go and the idea of expanding the arch, so we have chewing and we know that that's going to be helpful, but it's not going to help everybody and sometimes they need some help. to get that happening. And we've talked about the ELF appliance. Are there other appliances that can be used? Is there just really just this one, or this major one that the orthodontist put on with the screw that, you know, applies pressure, lateral pressure to the teeth to expand that arch?
Well, the great thing about the ALF is that it not only does lateral pressure, but it does forward pressure. You know, so...
You need to get that frontward movement too, don't you?
Yes, you do. You need that forward movement. So, I don't know if there are other appliances out there that will be as gentle and as effective as the ALF appliance. But perhaps it's a direction that we need to be going,
mm-hmm.
because we need to consider a lot more about the body when we're changing things. We're discovering.
Exactly. I talk a lot about the reductionist way that we've been approaching medicine and dentistry, where we go to the cell, and now we're down to the cell parts, and now we're down to the atoms that make up the cells, and nobody's in charge of putting it back together and seeing how they interact with one another. And I think that's a really big role of the oral facial myofunctional therapist, that they are the person that has a pretty deep knowledge base in a couple of different areas, and they're the ones who are kind of putting everything back together.
Yes. Well, it's interesting. What's interesting to me is that each patient, like Joy Moeller says, is a snowflake, and with each patient, I'm able to learn so much because of just the different needs of each patient. And you have to be a great listener, because there's so much that can be missed if you're really not, you know, if your attention to detail is not there with all the needs that make up a dysfunction.
Yeah, there's more than one thing. You're not just going to put an appliance in. So there are these other little kind of mouth guard looking appliances. Do they do the same thing, or is that something different?
Yeah. Some of my patients, I like them to wear the Myo Munchie. That is a great appliance. It's not so much of a tooth mover, but it helps to get them chewing. It helps to get the muscles working, and that's very important because they're not used to chewing. Mm-hmm. So to get them chewing. And then to get them breathing through their nose, if you could get the tongue in the right place, up off the floor of the mouth, and breathing through their nose, facial development will happen, you know, to some degree with just those things,
mm-hmm.
chewing and breathing through your nose with a lip seal. So as simple as that is, our kids are not breathing through their nose. They're watching video games.
Yeah.
And their mouths are hanging open. And it's so funny, if you get them in a room and have them watch a movie, you could see just how their mouths are hanging open. But, you know, recognizing it is the first step. So, mm-hmm. You know, and supporting each other for this cause. And I thank you for bringing this to the light, because it's a mission of mine too, is educating those people who don't know, because for a long time I didn't know, and I've been in the industry for many years, and this is just so enlightening for me.
It's scary how much we don't know, and every time I get an answer to a question, I suddenly have like 5 or 6 more questions. And there are some people, I suppose, that are really intimidated by the amount of information that still needs to be learned, and they're very happy with their head down and just doing the things that they've been doing. They're super comfortable like that. Apparently, I'm only comfortable at the exact precipice or at the very edge of the cliff, and I'm just more comfortable with change than I am with status quo. So, you know, we all have our place in this planet. We still need people to clean teeth and, you know, in a traditional way, but a good clinician will have what I like to call professional curiosity as to why is this tongue tied? Why is that happening? Is the tongue really that big of a driver of the maxilla? You know, all of those kinds of questions and the posture thing.
Well, you can really see it. And sometimes just, you know, it's worth it, like you said, being at the edge and educating people. Like, you know, when you see the tongue down to the floor of the mouth and you look at the palate and you see that it's vaulted, you know, that's the time to really bring light to it, because it is obvious, you know, when a hygienist who's been trained to listen to a dentist for so long and now she learns something different, she can challenge him or her with newfound knowledge.
Right.
You know, it needs to be a relationship like that.
I agree 100%. So what is the best approach, do you think? Let's say there's a hygienist who's listening to this episode and wondering what is it that they can do? So now they know about tongue tie, big deal. So is that something that they should talk to their dentist about, or their employer, I guess, is more accurate? And like on a lunch meeting or a weekend,
well, the thing that she can do is she could be educated herself. Sometimes what hygienists will do is they'll wait until the doctor pays for a meeting for her to go.
Mm-hmm.
I've really, really only enjoyed, in the beginning it was nice, you know, we used to travel around and get educated to be more of a team approach in a practice. But as I became more mature, I wanted to choose my own courses, and the courses that I would choose would challenge my thinking. And so to learn about tongue tie, I went to a IATP meeting and got to hear real professionals. That's International Association of Tongue Tie Professionals. And I got to hear some real professionals talk about tongue tie and why it's important. And that was, I was so blown away. And for so long, I never even looked underneath the tongue. I couldn't even recognize it, which is just, and I would just listen to the doctor say, oh, so the child won't be able to tongue kiss.
Right.
And that's the extent of it, you know? So I encourage the hygienist to dig her heels in or his heels in and learn more. There's a lot more to learn out there.
One thing along those same lines that occurs to me now is the idea of this new part of the tongue that's been identified, at least to me, that was brought up at the AAMS meeting, the Academy of Applied Myofunctional Sciences. Meeting in September, the blade of the tongue and what that is and what it should be. And I don't know, were we taught about the blade? I think we graduated about the same year.
Yeah, the blade, meaning
the part of the tongue that is from the attachment forward. So some people's attachment is very far forward, and maybe only a quarter of the tongue is really truly free. And that attachment should be in the middle third, at least, of the tongue, or in the center of the middle third of the tongue. And then that anterior portion is called the blade. And that's not a word that I'm used to at all.
And I have to say I'm not too used to it either.
So we're always learning.
To go back to our notes and see what that is about.
Well, it's easier to talk
right now.
It's easier to talk. I was just going to say it's easier to talk to the dentist than to say that the blade of the tongue appears to be, you know, inadequate or something like that.
Yeah.
When we have these terms, these anatomical terms, especially, I think it's important that we start to use them.
It's true. And, you know, the name the name tongue tie is also being challenged.
Yes.
You know, to tethered oral tissues, which is very good.
Yes, I like that
Seven
too.
Boys.
Yep. We had we talked with a lactation specialist also, Allison Hazelbaker, and she's not a fan of that term, mostly because it also includes the frenum that attach the lips and the cheek to the palate and to the lower jaw, to the mandible. And she thinks that that may be an okay term for something else, but tongue tie should be still retained as a term. So that was a different way of looking at it for me.
Yeah, controversial.
Yeah. Yay for controversy.
Yay!
So, Judy, how do people get in touch with you if they live in New York and they want to see you as a patient, or if they have questions? How can they get in touch with you?
Well, you could visit my website, www.oromyologist.com. That's OROMYOLOGIST, oromyologist, or you could put my name in, Judith Denver Page, and it'll pop up on my website with my contact information.
So it's oromyologist.com.
Yes.
Awesome. Okay, so that's terrific. Thank you so much for being with us today on this extended version here of the World Day of OM Science in February this 2016. Thanks for joining me again, Judy.
You're welcome.
And there we have Judy Denver Page, and she is an OMT, a COMT, that is residing and practicing in New York State. I think it's in the area of New York City. So thank you very much, and we'll be talking with her in the future as well. Have a great rest of the day.